Johnson. Welcome to the March 15th meeting, Eyes of March, by the way, any of you that know Shakespeare, yes, meeting of the Amador Air District Board of Directors. And do we have a quorum?
Yes.
Perfect, thank you. Then please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good. I am looking for a motion or...
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Great. All in favor of approving the agenda, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. The agenda is approved. All right, public matters not on the agenda. Discussion items only, no action to be taken. Any person may address the board at this time upon any subject within the jurisdiction of the Amador Air District Board of Directors. However, any matter that requires action may be referred to staff or a committee for a report and recommendation for possible action at a subsequent board meeting. Please note there is a 5-minute limit per topic. Kathy Coos Brazil, welcome.
Director of the Amador Fire Safe Council.
And Kathy, pull that mic right down in front of you, please. Thank you.
Acquainted with the microphone. Executive Director of the Amador Fire Safe Council, and I just came here today to let you know that we have been awarded another grant this year by State Farm Insurance and the NFPA for a green waste container program. And I've already been talking to the folks at the Air District, and the rollout of the containers will be for Wildfire Awareness Day, which is May the 7th. And we'll be able to put our little bit of grant in with the Air District and hopefully get about 2 months' worth of funding. Containers at Lockwood Station 1, Sutter Creek Firehouse, Silver Drive up in Pioneer, and then Pine Acres.
You say containers, you mean dumpsters?
Dumpsters, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Pine needle dumpsters.
Yeah, it's been known under a lot of different monikers, including on today's agenda was
pine needle program or something like that.
Bins.
Yeah, smoke reduction bin, the pine needle bin, the green waste. It's all the same thing.
Okay.
Folks bring their green waste material in and put it in the dumpster, and it reduces.
So will you be working, Kathy, in conjunction with the Air District?
Yes.
To distribute those bins?
Yeah, it looks like when I talked to the folks last week, when we got the notification, it'll go to those. And they're also giving us banners this year, so we'll be able to banners up there and
that say things like no old mattresses and things like that.
Well, that's
splitting mole heads. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or TVs.
This is not a house.
All right.
This is not your trash can. So thank you.
Right. You bet. Excellent.
Good
thank
news.
You, Kathy.
It's you awesome.
Bet. You bet.
Jim, on that topic, is it envisioned that this complementary grant to what we're doing already adds to the funding allocation we've made to this program or augments it?
It augments it, and we did this last year with the Fire Safe Council.
What is it?
Pardon me?
$500.
It's $500.
Oh, gosh.
Is the grant.
Okay.
Oh.
It's $500, so it's small and compared to what we budget for this program, but being able to work with the Fire Safe Council, we're able to make their dollars go further because we've negotiated with ACES.
Right, for the transfer costs and stuff. Okay.
Very good. Thank you. Okay, we're on to any other public issues? Okay, we're on to administrative matters. Item 1, minutes, review and approval of the January 19th board minutes.
I'd move approval with one minor correction. Page 4 of 5, item 6. Third line down in the left margin. It says complains and it should be complaints.
Well, I'll go ahead and second that.
Any other corrections? No?
Oh.
Okay. Then I will ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
Just did.
Oh, I'm sorry. You did?
Then I had a second from Onetta.
Yes. I apologize. Yes. We'll take the question now. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
I will abstain due to my absence.
Okay. Thank you. Ozone, item number two, Ozone Advance Program. Please, Jim.
Yes, good afternoon. Jim McCargue, Air Pollution Control Officer. And just want to start off by saying welcome to Mr. Knox. Glad to have you here. This is regarding the Ozone Advance Program, and we've got Mr. Ray Kapai here who's going to give a brief presentation in just a moment, but by means of a very quick and general introduction, this is pertaining to the federal 8-hour ozone standard, also known as the NAAQS, N-A-A-Q-S, the National Ambient Air Quality Standard. The new standard for 2015 has been reduced to 70 parts per billion, whereas in 2008 it was at 75 parts per billion. Essentially, this is an example of the goalpost being moved. We were in compliance with the 2008 standard. Now, with the new 2015 designation, and they're not, by the way, the CARB is not getting around to, or EPA, I forget which one, is not getting around to doing the designations until later this year. But it appears as though our number will be 71. 71 puts us over the 70 parts per billion. That takes us out of attainment, and it puts us into the non-attainment category. We are in the first level of non-attainment, which is considered the marginal level. And so with respect to this, we became aware of this program called the Ozone Advance Program. And I wanted to introduce it to the board. And since it's a pretty technical program and there's quite a bit to it, I asked Ray Kapai to come in and talk about it. And yes.
When you're done there, yeah.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I have a question, Jim. As far as that ozone attainment, would these fires we've been having, like the Rim Fire, King Fire, Butte Fire, would that have any bearing on our non-attainment?
I can't say for sure, but they do have another program. I believe it's called Exceptional Events, and maybe I can have Ray talk about it when he comes up in just a minute. But one thing I did want to mention is when we first became aware of the goalposts moving and that we were then going to be in non-attainment, the first avenue we as a district approached is a program called Rural Transport Areas. And those are areas where the ozone and the pollutants get brought in from other larger areas.
Blown in.
Sacramento, San Joaquin. And we felt incredibly optimistic that we had very good grounds for being part of that program. Unfortunately, the way the program is written, they say that you cannot be adjacent to what they call a metropolitan statistical area, which both Sacramento County and San Joaquin County is. And because our county border touches those two counties, we were then no longer qualified for the Rural Transport Area Program. We were very disappointed because we felt like, again, the rural transport, if anybody qualifies, we felt like the Amador Air District should qualify for it.
We couldn't distinguish ourselves from them because it's not county to county. I mean, our county may be adjacent to San Joaquin and Sacramento counties, but we're not adjacent to the cities, which are the urbanized areas.
Right. And unfortunately, the way the rule is written in statute is that to qualify to be a rural transport area, you cannot be adjacent to one of those areas. And because those areas are in those counties, we therefore are not qualified. Trust me, I think it's really unfair, and I think we will pursue it further to some extent, But we did ask some questions. We got up the chain pretty far, at least thus far, and we were told no. As a matter of fact, I think they told us, Matt, there was only three, and they were all in... And those are in Nevada. Nevada and Arizona.
And again, that's because...
So essentially you have to skip a county or whatever.
Exactly.
You know, the pollutants have to blow over Amador and be measured in Alpine. And
there you go.
Be.
That's the way it would be.
So basically it's screw your neighbor, to be quite blunt. Isn't that okay, acceptable in their eyes?
It's very disappointing that we weren't able to get any further with that program. But as I said... We will continue pursuing it to whatever extent we can. In the meantime, as a kind of second choice or second alternative, we've discovered this Ozone Advance program, and that's what we want to talk about today. And so at this time, I was going to go ahead and bring Ray Kapai up.
Just one question. Jim, do you feel there's any possibility to convince the board to redefine the area as more minute than just the county itself, to look at districts?
Well, so far what they've told us is for us to be considered a rural transport area, you know, we have one monitor that's actually monitoring the air quality, and it's up here. Yeah.
Downtown Jackson.
Yeah, in Jackson. And they said if we had a second one down there on the west end of the county at the county line, and if we had another monitor and we showed on that monitor that we were in attainment, but then our monitor up here is out of attainment, we could show that there's some sort of, you know, drift over the county boundary, and that could potentially qualify us. So it's kind of a long stretch, but it is the only carrot that they've offered so far.
Well, the sad part about it is that whole thing is that they know that already.
Yeah.
That's no secret.
It isn't. No, it's not. You're right.
It's when I read this yesterday, I went home upset because, you know, we finally got to attainment, and then just to get knocked out by one.
Yeah, we got to attainment by separating ourselves from our neighboring county to the south.
Right.
When we were tied together, we were in non-attainment, but when we separated, we were in attainment.
You know, and the other thing that goes along with all of this is that we lost all these industries over the years, the lumber and a lot of the mining, a lot of the clay plants, and, you know, none of that helps.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's all transport.
I think what Lewis says is real true. I mean, look at what do we really do in this county that has much effect at all. There's not a whole lot going on. Wish we had a little more going on.
Don't ride our bicycles enough, I guess.
Live in too many hills. Kill me.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and have Ray come up.
Yes, thank you.
Fahi, I'm an air quality consulting engineer. I've been consulting engineer for the county
24 years or more.
Okay. All right, 24.
Just dim them. Mm-hmm. Oh, they can dim them from the control panel over here.
Okay.
Thank you. There we go.
That's dim.
But I have to laugh. We were discussing this issue about ozone transport. The reality is that if everybody in Amador County packed up and left the county, the ozone concentrations wouldn't change much.
Exactly.
Okay, and the two main sources of ozone producing are, number one, the transport from other places, and the other is biogenic. Nature also produces VOCs, and that contributes to our ozone. So at the end of the day, Amador County and many other rural counties, I mean, our neighbor to the south, let's see, Calaveras, has been bumped up to moderate. They're not even marginal. So they've been asked to prepare a state implementation plan to show how they're going to come into compliance. And that's a much more difficult road. I'm working with them also. So trust me, Amador right now, being in the marginal or will be marginal, we're in the better spot. But it's frustrating the goalposts being changing. If you were to take a look at the ozone concentration in Amador or many other parts of California, what you would find is that the ozone concentration has been dropping steadily for over 20 years. Remember in Southern California, the number of days of violation exceeded over 250 days of violation a year in the 70s. Today, the population of LA has more than doubled since that time, and the number of violations has dropped by 70%.
Wow.
That's a remarkable achievement, which shows that that control does work. But in rural areas like ours, where we don't have a lot of sources, we don't have much industry, essentially we're at the mercy of our neighbors and whatever air brings in. That's what we... El Dorado is kind of in the same boat. They're even worse. They're getting a lot of the air pushed in from the Carquinez Strait towards Sacramento, and that goes right up Highway 50 corridor. And it is unfortunate that they've chosen to have rules that keep changing. So all of a sudden, you have a situation where the air is getting cleaner, but the designation is getting worse. So all of a sudden, if you were against some project anywhere, you could say, well, look, the air has gotten worse. We are now in severe non-attainment. How can you possibly allow this industry here? And in fact, it was just the standards that changed. Air quality, in fact, has continued to improve. So I take some comfort in that because we're kind of monkeying around with the numbers, you know, we're changing the perception that the air quality has gotten worse. In fact, has not. In fact, if the standards had been kept alone, they've left the standards alone, San Joaquin Valley would be attainment today for ozone, the original standard. Now they finally met the standard only to find out the standard has changed. So I don't know if you saw their annual report, the first big page, the APCO was congratulating the county for attaining a standard that no longer exists. Now for places
we should
where
send them a letter saying we want to round it off.
So the question is, what do you do in cases like right now Amador is attainment? What kind of steps can we voluntarily take to lower our emissions? And so EPA has this program. There we go. And so, you know, it's that 0.07, hopefully it becomes law, I think we're going to become Marshall. But the bottom line is right now, we have a window of opportunity to actually do something about reducing emissions voluntarily. Now, this is a voluntary program. Nobody's forcing us to do it. But the crux of the program is, next slide, please. The crux of the program is that we want to come into attainment, not just ozone, but also PM 2.5. Parallel to the advanced ozone program, there's also a advanced PM 2.5 program. We're actually going to kill both birds with one program. But the idea here is that if we're willing to make a commitment for 5 years, voluntarily undertake steps in the county to reduce ozone-forming emissions, and we can document this reduction ourselves, then EPA, if let's say down the road we become non-attainment, then EPA is willing to, with some, you know, hand-holding, give us credits for the reductions we've already achieved. Take those away from future reductions, they will ask. So it's kind of a win-win proposition that, this is completely up to us. Nobody's forcing us to do it. So over 5 years, we're going to sit down and ask ourselves, what can we do within county to cut down our emissions?
Do these have to be measurable? Do you have to demonstrate that?
They have to be. Typically, the measurements are done more in terms of an emissions inventory, where we tabulate all the sources we have, including cars and trucks, figure out what our current emissions are, so many tons a day of various pollutants.
So we shut down our last factory and recycle our last car and tear down our last house and call it good?
So what I was thinking is that if we have accurate inventory of what's happening there right now,
And then in 5 years, we say, okay, because of this program, here is the reductions we're expecting. And once we have that emission reduction, i.e. pounds per year, tons per year, we can then take that emission reduction, give it to ARB, and say, model these emissions and translate these reductions into reduction in ozone.
What's this voluntary program you're talking about?
This advanced program.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that one. But mm-hmm. back to my original question. So you're not, you're saying we'll adopt these measures, we'll project that we have X amount of reduction in emissions, and that projection goes, but it's not actually being measured at the sniffer station.
No, it's not measured at the sniffer. That's correct. Yeah. But that's not atypical, because every time we implement a new plan, we're always making a projection as to what we think the consequences will be from reduction in emissions. So I think that's not too far-fetched. We hope that reductions leads to improved air quality and lower concentrations. But, you know, that we'll have to see. But if we can show that we've done our part to reduce emissions, and then ARB says that, hey, because of these reductions, your air quality improvement, your ozone concentration should drop by so many parts per million, then I think we can take credit for that. Of course, there's other sources, like outside of a county, that overwhelm our emissions. But then we have a very strong case to say, hey, we reduce these emissions. The reduction attributable to us is this. But as you can see, nothing has changed because of these other external forces.
But they won't look at that analysis now.
No, not yet. I think at this point, they just want to see what we want to do. Next slide, please. And here's kind of the big picture of attainment throughout the country. As you can see, we have the dubious stand. Almost a lot of the non-attainment stuff is either here or southern or Arizona. Any parts of California, the county designation is 5 or 6 pollutants.
What's an inclusion of ATCM for diesel engines? Is that
That is really a separate program. It's some very vaguely related. That simply states that the toxic air emissions coming from these diesel engines and exhaust, we want to curb those under a state program. And that it's been in force for several years. So any new engines that are brought in, or somebody that wants to permit a new diesel engine, it has to meet the ATCM standards, or we will allow them to operate. I'm not sure if I answered your question, but so that's kind of the big picture that the feds see. They say, "Well, look at California. I mean, look. I mean, you guys are the troublemakers. You're taking the rest of the country down." So, next slide, please. Okay. So, the benefits of the program is that if we can reduce emissions, hopefully we can, change from marginal to attainment. If we are bumped into a moderate zone, as Calaveras has, then any emission reductions we have right now, EPA is very willing to look at those reductions and credit those towards any future program. So I think we're kind of a little bit getting ahead of the curve by being proactive and saying, here's the things we can do ahead of time before being forced to do it.
Ray, the way I read this program, though, is it's a voluntary program for areas that are in attainment.
Yes.
And because of these changed rules, we're now in non-attainment.
Right now, we're not quite, but I think that while the transition is happening, and we had this discussion with EPA also, and they agreed that they would allow us entry into the program under the current situations. But I brought up that point.
Even though numerically we're not in non-attainment, they just haven't recategorized us yet.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, it's... For reasons known only to the EPA, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
What this involves is essentially we would sign up with the EPA to say we want part of the program. We would look at all the information we have in the county currently of the sources which are contributing to ozone formation. This is the emission.
And the step three, I think, is one of the most important part, and that is that we would look to essentially form a committee of citizens, people from the industry, government, and collectively the citizens and everybody would sit down and say, okay, what is everybody's thoughts and ideas how we should reduce emissions? This is a place where, for example, the community and the citizens would have equal voice into how they feel the county should be progressing to reduce emissions. Normally, we only hear from the citizens when they have a project that they don't like and then everybody shows up. But here's a case where we would actually invite them to take part in the planning and get their input as to how best to keep emissions low and in our county in attainment.
Well, I had a person who's talked to me a while back about something similar, and they thought that people should only be able to drive their car one day a week, and that's kind of what that person's thought was. And I mean, that's what the EPA wants. Maybe something like that. I'm sure that would get our emissions lower.
Yeah, that would work.
I can see the easy one, though. I can see we're backing ourselves in a corner because the easiest one out there is for somebody to say, well, just stop all outdoor burning.
Wood burning in the homes.
But I think that's the kind of a discussion I think that collectively needs to happen amongst all the stakeholders. I think that whichever way we go, I think that if we are committed to reducing emissions and so forth, then down the road, I think there's going to have to be some shared sacrifice somewhere.
But I go back to your earlier statement, Ray. I think you were absolutely right, Mr. Kapai, when you said basically there's, you
moved everybody out of the county.
Yeah.
Nothing to change.
I mean, so we're going to go in there and shoot ourselves in the rear to say that we've accomplished something in the EPA, and really our actions are almost meaningless compared to what's blowing into this county.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. But I think at the same time, we can't just throw our hands up in the air and say we're not going to do anything. We're just victims of all this. So I think that we have to show some effort and progress. Because let's say if we are in the situation of Calaveras where they get bumped into moderate, well now, the hammer drops and you have to make changes and drastic changes in making the rules really tight, which makes it very difficult to permit new sources. And it's really hard on the community. We don't want to get to that spot if we can help it. We'd rather take some step proactively just to get these people off our back.
I hope people take steps proactively and elections coming up.
Well, speaking of wood-burning stoves, I mean, maybe we could come up with a requirement all new houses have to have a catalytic converter on their wood stoves.
Yeah, I think,
I hate penalizing people for having wood stoves.
But isn't that the kind of idea that a stakeholder group could come up with?
I think this is really a great idea. I think one of the benefits of this thing is it brings, diverse opinions together on the same table. So that, people who always show up here at meetings and so forth, we want to invite them and they can have equal voice in this group to say, hey, this is your community. What would you want to, what sacrifice are you willing to make? And
we've all been involved in stakeholder groups on many different topics, Ray. I think you place a lot more value in them than the rest.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I've had more positive effect from stakeholder groups than the rest of my board, apparently.
But I think that also makes the county look good that we're proactively taking steps and doing things before being told we have to do them.
You're probably right, Ray, but I'm sorry. Just to get back to my original statement, this is all a bunch of malarkey. Nothing against you. You're probably telling us what we probably need to do. It's all bunk. What you're saying is probably correct.
Yeah.
But what has to be done is just baloney. And I'm not saying you're wrong. You're giving us good advice. I'm just saying that what's coming from the EPA and that, as far as, you have this stuff being blown in on us, and they're saying, oh, it's your fault, and we got to go in there and, kill our bunny rabbits so it can't eat organics and put out green stuff and make VOCs. Disturbing.
Well, maybe we could come up with some positive ideas for how to proceed if it's not...
I think all upcountry should stop burning their wood stoves because it might be blowing back down to lower areas and causing us to have non-attainment down here.
Okay, well, that's one opinion.
But I think that you know, the program is not set in stone. I mean, if you think there's a better idea of something else that could be done, I think, you know, this basically gives you a platform to operate from. I mean, nobody is holding a gun to your head that you have to do it this way or that way. You know, the reality is that we are subject to ozone transport. That's true. So what are our choices? We can do nothing and say, well, we're just helpless victims, go away, and then have the EPA beat up on us. Or do something like this, gain some PR, get the public involved, and generate some credits that will help us down the road should we need them.
And you're probably right. It's all window dressing and garbage, but if it's garbage, that'll help us.
Is garbage,
so be it.
Well, first thing I can think of is we can start the electric lawnmower program back up.
If you look at, for example, the ozone concentrations, the way the whole county is characterized, the monitor is sitting in Jackson. Okay, so the place to start is right next to where the monitor is. I mean, that's where the emissions from there are having the greatest effect.
Yeah.
There's probably no way to move the monitor.
So
we talked about that, didn't we?
Tried that one time.
So the question is that if you want the biggest bang for the buck, I would start in the most, you know, areas where the most people live, and see if there's something that can be done over there to, to down. But as I said, you know, there's no hard and fast. We're in a difficult situation. We're trying to make the best of it.
Ray, I was just talking to Mr. Crew here, and we were just having a sidebar conversation. But didn't we try years ago to see if we could have more air monitors or move the air monitors?
That'd be in right by the DMV.
Yeah.
Up to the airport, wasn't it?
Yeah, someplace outside of a hole.
Right.
I mean,
could we add more so we get a
please
more
get up
accurate
to the
measurement?
Microphone. Yeah.
Oh, I'm Matt, the inspector. I believe historically when you guys brought that up, the outcome might have been that they would keep this monitor here, and then you would get another monitor.
I think we ought to.
So that would, you know, you would still have the one stationary and then another one somewhere else. So you'd have two monitors or three.
I think that'd be just fine.
Which, I don't know if you want to talk about Butte County or something about monitors, but it does bring up, you know, other issues, having more monitors.
I'd like to look into that and have that discussion.
I believe that's what you talked about.
I think he's, you know, I understand where he's coming from. We'll have a monitor someplace else out of a hole, and then everybody in Jackson there has to have electric lawnmower. And
so what would be the downside of having more than one monitor?
I think it would. It would very
accused of being unfriendly
having
to the cities.
Go ahead.
much easier to quantify transport when you've got multiple monitors.
Right.
We can look at things upwind, downwind, and what the difference is. Can't do that with just a single monitor.
I think it's something we should really be looking into if
we
can legally do it.
I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, we can approach ARB to set up some additional monitors, or maybe the county can fund one or two monitors.
Well,
because that would clearly tell us that what is coming in at our doorstep.
Well, and to your earlier point, maybe if we had the monitor on our western boundary and it documented that the air was cleaner down there, but this sniffer was dirtier, would it demonstrate this leap over and give us that rural county exemption or whatever? Possibly.
And then this is maybe a question for Mr. Kapai, because you're an engineer. You know, one thing I would wonder about, if we're getting that transfer from other counties, at what elevation is it coming in? You know, is it coming in, you know, 10,000 feet and then dropping down, hitting Amador County, like, say, Ione or Jackson? So if you go down the county line, you may say, hey, there's nothing here.
Actually, ozone,
I think they put them.
Remember, first of all, is a regional pollutant. It's not, you know, like from a stack or something.
Okay.
On days when you have very high ozone, it usually is warm, sunny days. In those cases, the boundary layer, i.e. the depth of the layer carrying the pollution, usually is pretty high. So you can easily have 800 meters, a kilometer of dirty air that's going to come down. So that air is pretty well uniformly mixed. So I think
from
that
ground level up, or
from the ground level up, because usually ozone you don't get on cold days. Usually on warm, warm sunny day, the depth of the and you can sometimes see this on an airplane if you're coming in. You'll see, look down, you'll see the dirty air and has a kind of a cap, and it, the air above that is clean.
Yeah, I've seen that. I think from the mountains, looking down the valley, you can see like a little.
That's the depth of the dirty air that's being, and within that depth is fairly well mixed. You don't have a lot of gradients within there. And so I expect that if we put a monitor, let's say the wind is blowing from the west to the east, and we put it on a western edge, then the air coming in, that monitor would pretty accurately tell us what is the ozone being transported into the county, how many parts per million.
Yeah, because our western edge is very unpopulated. There's nothing out there.
So if the concentration of ozone at a property boundary, let's say, is 0.06, and then in Jackson they measure 0.07, well, that means that our contribution is only 0.01. 0.06 of that came from there. But we can't say that without the additional data.
Need more monitors.
I think maybe that could make a compelling case to ARB and others that, hey, here's numerical data to show.
Right.
And we're not relying on the designation being next to some other county. We're saying here is factual data of ozone entering our county. Here's the parts per million that came in yesterday, day before.
Yeah, maybe we might have .090, and that's way out of attainment. Coming in from next door. So, what can we do to change that? Nothing.
Well, I think then the question then becomes, what? How can the county be expected to reduce the numbers of what's coming into the county? In other words, if we are contributing 0.02 parts per million of ozone, we can't be expected to reduce all the junk that came in. So, I mean, we are only responsible for this much, and hence our plans and regulations should not become so punitive but without data, we're at the mercy of the bureaucrats up top, because they simply say, well, you're next to Sacramento, forget it, you don't qualify.
Any idea what it costs per monitoring station?
I don't, but I can get that information to the board. I can.
I think that would be really important.
I can find that, and maybe
that's,
you can share the cost between county and the air district.
Do you know, Jim? Do you have any idea the estimated cost of more monitors?
The only experience we have recently is the emergency monitors we put out during the Butte fire.
Yes.
And I think those were around $20,000 per monitor. So, I mean, if this is a direction we would go, we certainly could come back with budget, because we do have a reserve that we could towards that.
Is that
right.
The BIAM or?
BIAM. Okay. BIAM. Yeah.
Can you rent them? Or you have to practice to buy them, huh?
Yeah, you probably want to buy them.
Okay.
But I think it's the ongoing maintenance and cost that's...
Are they set up on like a SCADA system to where it transmits the data to your central point?
Yeah, it's all real-time, internet-accessible, live data. Yeah.
It sounds to me like that may be where we're headed as we talk about the budget.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Actually, I do have one for Ray. If, in fact, we do this and go head in that direction, and you are relaying the rules with regards to EPA, do you think that do you have an opinion as to whether the EPA is going to, at that point, waive that rule that because we are boundarying San Joaquin and Sacramento counties that...
Actually, that we have that discussion with the EPA before we put the monitor.
Okay.
I think then we have a very compelling case numerically to show that, we should not be held hostage to what's coming in. Right now, we don't have any information, so we put us on the same
spot. Because I can see where it's possible. You might make the case, you can move everybody, everything out of Amador County. We still couldn't meet attainment, at some point in time. And it's probably not there now. But if it was bad enough coming in from across their borders, you know, we could all shut down, all leave, and you'd still be getting.
Well, especially if they continue to do as they've just done, and that's move the goalposts.
Right. Yeah.
You can always end up with more people and not attainment if you lessen the parts per billion that you're allowed to.
Right.
If they left the standard alone today, we would be in attainment, and we wouldn't need
right.
this.
Mm-hmm. So I would hope EPA would see, if we make the decision to do more monitoring, that they would see that as a good faith effort on our part to show they're wrong.
I think that's worth pursuing and we'll look into.
Right.
Essentially, what the plan requires us typically to do is that we will do a inventory of all the sources we have, including cars, trucks, and natural sources. We would analyze the effects of any other large sources around our county. This includes sources upwind and downwind of the county. So any large sources.
What define a source, like a potential forest fire?
No, this would be like a power plant, like we have the Cosumnes plant,
right?
A large natural gas power plant right near the county border. So that would be that. We would identify control measures that we think that will keep the ozone levels below our current level max. And then we would seek ARB's assistance, then once we figured out how much we can reduce our emissions, to translate those reduction into lower ozone concentrations. And cost of this thing is very minimal, about $5,000 a year. And we have to decide if we wish to participate. As I said, it's completely voluntary. But I do see some benefits. Nothing else brings the public together to ask their opinion what we should do. And you have some PR value. But I agree with Brian that, you know, and at the end of the day, after everything we've done, you know, if it's not going to make much difference, why are we bothering? Well, the alternative is to do nothing, and I think that's not the preferred way to go either.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. You know, don't spend $5,000 to try to, you know, make a better plan, or just take the consequences. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's that's up to the board.
Right.
So do you perceive there to be consequences in the event that we don't voluntarily partake in this plan?
I would say not really. I don't see any downside if we don't participate. It's just that if we don't participate, then if we get bumped into non-attainment, especially moderate, then we're going to have to do all this with a hammer over our head.
Right.
You know, it's take it or leave it. But that's what... certainly the option is there if we wish to.
And is this a decision we really should make today as far as timing goes?
I don't believe there's any absolute rush to make a decision today. Certainly, you know, if the direction from the board was to move forward, we could move forward. Or if we want to come back next time with some of the things we've discussed regarding monitors and electric lawnmowers and things like that, that could be a direction we pursue.
What's the wishes of the board?
I had one question.
Along with some estimates about the additional monitoring stations.
The cost of those.
Yeah.
Right.
And potential locations. I mean, is there a way to monitor prevailing wind patterns or something, or document those through NOAA or some outfit like that, and ascertain a location in our western side of our county that may be best suited for placement of a new monitoring station?
Yeah, you have a couple down there or something. Just try to look at it and be able to quantify and say, hey, this is what's coming at us, and once you get in the county, this is, you know, this is how it's still that same number. Even when you get past our population centers.
Yeah, Ray, I had a couple questions from an engineering side of things, and that is, you gave the example, well, if 0.6 was coming in from San Joaquin and we're 0.7, we're only responsible for 0.1. What if 0.8 is coming in from San Joaquin and we have 0.7 as measured on our western boundary and we have 0.7 here in Jackson? What would that...
If a 0.8 is coming in and we have 0.7?
I mean, can dilution over vast areas of unpopulated areas result in a lowering of the measurement?
Not for ozone.
Not for ozone.
No, okay. For dust and SO2 and carbon monoxide, yes. But not in the case of ozone.
Okay.
There's no dilution there.
Okay.
I just needed to clarify when I originally spoke. I talked about if we had a monitor at the county boundary and it showed a lower number, yet we had a higher number in Jackson. Actually, Matt clarified, and what we would be looking at the boundary is what is actually coming in. So the number would most likely be higher there, and then our number could potentially be lower. And in that case, we would show that the transport is clearly coming from that area, and it's obviously contributing to our monitor. Does that sound
well? That was my question.
I mean, if
I got it reversed, I'm sorry.
If you've got 8 parts per million or 0.07 parts per million coming in, and then somehow in Jackson it went down, well, then that raises the question, where did the additional ozone go? Because, you know, there's no other source, there's no other sinks of ozone. That cannot be answered quite as simply as that.
Well, it would be counterintuitive to your answer that you gave that ozone doesn't dilute itself over a distance.
It's not like other pollutants that gets diluted. So something, most likely, what happens is that the location of the monitor is influenced by immediate, very localized effects disproportionately. Whereas a monitor at the boundary of county boundary, there's no other sources or anything to influence. So that is a much more accurate reading of a regional concentration, whereas the monitor in Jackson is more indicative of just the immediate area right in Jackson and not the county as a whole. So that's some of the issues that can come up. But that could happen, but I can tell you the answer to that is not that simple.
I do have a question, Mr. Kapai. I'm a little bit confused. So once you reach a certain threshold of ozone, is there anything that reduces that threshold?
Typically, the ozone, as you know, is a photoreactive, photochemical pollutant. It's formed in a combination of sunlight and you've got to have oxygen, nitrogen, and VOCs. You need all three to create ozone. Ozone, as you might know, is a very unstable molecule. If we had a little bit of ozone in a clean room, very quickly the half-life of ozone it would very quickly fall back into oxygen. So what happens in the atmosphere is that you have a steady formation of ozone, sunlight and NOx, and then you have a steady destruction of ozone because, as you said, ozone is a very unstable molecule. So, for example, as the evening comes...
I was going to say, when sunlight goes away, then it starts...
Sunlight goes away, guess what? No more ozone is being formed, but the ozone is being destroyed. So all of a sudden, the ozone concentration drops down to zero. So it's a dynamic balance between the formation of ozone and destruction of ozone. And that balance, you know... A lot of times, so when we say the ozone concentration is 0.07, that means that you're producing and destroying enough ozone to keep that concentration at 0.07. The minute, let's say you start destroying more than you're producing, concentration will drop. But that's about as simple an explanation I can provide how the concentration can change. It's not like the other pollutants like CO or particulate that we can say, okay, we had a lot of dilution, we had a lot of fresh air, so it went down. Many times also, to form ozone, it takes about 8 hours. So in the morning when you have a lot of emissions from cars, those emissions don't translate to ozone till much later.
So areas that are routinely cloud covered or whatever tend to produce less ozone.
Much less ozone. Also, you see this, for example, in a city like Livermore,
which doesn't have a lot of heavy industry. But there's other counties around there, Contra Costa and so forth, that put out a lot of emissions from refineries. But those emissions then get transported, and then over a period of hours, ozone starts to form, and you get very high concentration of ozone. But there really is not much.
Well, Jim,
but it's going up against that
up the hill,
too, just sure. Like happened in Folsom and El Dorado
that
Hills.
In Folsom, El Dorado Hills, same thing.
Well, Jim and Mr. Capehi, really appreciate the presentation. I think it sounds like the board is hoping to carry this over to our next meeting, where we will hopefully have some more data on what the cost and, just from my personal opinion, it seems obvious that we could use some more monitoring stations, especially on the edge of the, the boundary of the county. So for now, let's continue it, Jim.
Okay.
Thank you.
And one up at the airport.
Yeah.
At the airport, and one at the western edge. And
there you go.
Range of measurements.
Okay, so we're on agenda item 3, district rules update.
Okay. The district rules, and I'm going to have Mr. Kapai again speak to this. Mr. Kapai began reviewing the district's rules for update. However, this is related to what we were just talking about. We were in compliance with the ozone standard, and the rules took on a lesser priority. Now, with the new 2015 designation set to take place later this year, the rules update has been given a higher priority for us. And in addition to that, there's other things that we need or we could use a look at regarding our rules, including the addition of new pollutants, definitions, prevention of significant deterioration rule, new source rule, reference to codes and regulations, inclusion of ATCM for diesel engine, rule for burning toxic hazardous vegetation, and then the change in the district's name hasn't been changed. At the last meeting we had, there was a request, I believe, from Director Peters to bring back to this board at this meeting an update on the rules update. And so for that, I'll call Ray back up.
On this one slide where we are, I've been working on the update for several months, and by the end of this month, I'll have a draft of the updated rules. Just as a background, our rules are 25 to 30 years old. Many of them do not even list the air pollutants that are currently we're expected to comply with. And in addition, there's a very urgent need to redefine things such as a major source, use of best available control technology, and so forth. So what's happening is, with the rules as they are right now, Amador County can actually act like a little magnet, attracting industry that wishes to pollute more because our rules would allow them to do so. For example, best available control technology, some of our thresholds are in the order of like 100 tons a year. Most districts are like 5 pounds a day. But we're at very high level because that's what it was probably 25 years ago. So we'd like to update the rules so that new industry coming in would comply with the use of best available control technology, which everybody else does, make sure that all the new pollutants are accounted for. Things such as major searches, such as federal, the PSD program that Jim mentioned, we have not been delegated that responsibility, and frankly, I'd prefer not to have that responsibility, just let EPA handle that program. So we will just stick with our normal NSR rules, Title V. And the way it's going to work is that once I've submitted the draft rules to the district for review, I'm going to get input from ARB as well. At this point, these are strictly administrative drafts to see what they feel we need. After that, it'll be submitted to the board, and the board will then have discussions, et cetera. And eventually, once we agree on a final set, then we have to do a public notice, a workshop to allow the public to come in and discuss, offer their input. Usually I prefer to have a workshop where everybody comes in, they get a copy of the new rules, and give us their opinion. And then depending on their comments, we end up with the final set of rules that the board then.
Who would respond to any comments that are given?
Actually, the Air District would.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Here's a case where we're a little bit ahead of the curve, because once we are designated as non-attainment and EPA eventually breathes down our back, this is exactly what they're going to ask us to do. So this gives us a bit of a head start that
Any questions of the board?
Ray, do you know when the non-attainment status is going to be designated?
I thought it was November.
Designation, excuse me.
What's the design value and all that stuff? We have time.
With that in mind, and regarding these rules, you know, get a jump on it here, but along down the line, EPA comes down and says, the thing they're going to require us to do is update the rules. How recent of an update of our rules will satisfy the EPA to let them feel that we're current and up to date, or will they come in again? I guess my question is, why rush forward with doing these rules if EPA is going to come in and say the first thing you got to do is update your rules? Why do it now? Why not do it then? Then they'll be current anyway.
The updates that we're doing right now are basically going to be addressing as if we were going to become non-attainment. The stuff we're putting in these rules are the same things that the EPA is going to ask us to do, such as use best available control technology, tighter limits on combustion sources, all those things that they're going to ask us to do, we will already, because we've looked at rules at other districts who had gone through this process. So we're not starting from ground zero. We're using some of their rules as a template to get an idea what's going to be, you know, down the road for us. And then we're those as well. But you bring up a good point. There's no absolute rush that we have to get all these rules and everything passed. But that's, you know, that's something for the board to consider.
And he's brought up an interesting point there, because if you go in there and just, I've dealt with government agencies before, and sometimes you have everything just basically done perfect, that regulator, whoever they are, they want to come in and say, aha, I did something. If you leave nothing on the table, they're allowed to put something on the table that probably they wouldn't put on otherwise, just to show that they took action.
But, I mean, that would be a pretty – I mean, if we have to respond to that scenario, I think the effort needed on our part to address that would be pretty minor, because the bulk of the heavy lifting would already have been done by then.
Okay. Excuse me. Has Louis left?
Yes.
We have no quorum.
No quorum.
I guess he had something else scheduled.
Yeah, he said he did. He didn't say what, but, you know. Well, shoot. So I guess that means we can continue talking, but we can't really pass any motions or make any motions.
We'll have to bring these items back. I mean, the budget's the next item.
Right.
It's coming back anyway. So,
right.
So it sounds like we're gonna bring these items back.
Right.
So just for
yeah.
So, Ray, what is it that you use to generate the draft rules that you not only submit to us, but you submit to ARB for their input? Is it just aspect of being outdated over time, or is it new mandates from state or federal EPA that you must have these rules in your rules, your district's rules, or?
No. What we do is we take a look at, let's take for example, the starting point of our rules is, for example, definitions of different air pollutants and sources. What is a major source? These are definitions that are in our rules, you know, which were put in place 25 years ago. we go back to those definitions and say, wait a minute, this definition is no longer accurate, that a major source is now not something that puts out 200 tons a year, but it actually is much less. And definition of criteria pollutants now includes these pollutants that did not exist back then. So in that particular example, what we're doing is basically just updating the definitions and so forth. Now, in specific rules, for example, permitting rules, in that particular case, we have to take a look at what level of control technology should be used at what emission level. I mean, when do we ask people to use best available control technology? What's a reasonable threshold before we say, hey, you're putting out this much, you need to reduce your emissions instead of have no controls till you're much higher? Those are things that we take a look at what's already been done by other districts our size to get an idea as to which way everybody's trending. So we have a pretty good idea as to what those rules need to say. So we have some templates that we can work off. But, you know, our district is unique. We don't want to simply follow what everybody else did.
Right.
We want to take a look at...
Essentially, we're just moving our own goalposts.
Yeah. So we only want to move...
The EPA just did to us.
So, for example, there's all kinds of new greenhouse gas rules. Well, as far as I'm concerned...
Yeah, now CO2
there's
is
no,
a pollutant.
You know, there's absolutely no reason to include all those greenhouse gas rules just because Sacramento did. I mean, that doesn't make sense.
Well, EPA recognizes it as a pollutant now. Where it didn't 25 years ago.
So we're only touching those rules that make sense for us within the context of our community. And that's it.
What would the cost be, Jim, for, I mean, it seems pretty obvious to me anyway that we need to update the rules. Is there, I assume there's a cost associated with that? Do you know?
There was a cost. This was in front of the board in 2014, and the board approved having Ray do a rules update for submission back to the board for a review.
Okay.
And at that time, I think the budget was somewhere around 12,000. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Well, we'll come back to this. It just seems obvious to me that this rules update is probably pretty important, but that'll be up to the board. Next meeting. Okay, draft budget for 16-17. Mr. McCargue.
Yeah, and item number four is the draft budget. It's the first attempt at the budget, and obviously without a quorum, we'll just kind of discuss it, and it will be coming back to the next meeting in May. The memo I have for you has a few highlights, and I'll just cover those really quickly. Number one, the approach has been to structure a balanced budget so that current year revenues match the current year expenditures. I'll skip two and go to three, come back to two. Three, the goal is to have an ongoing budget that does not continue to add to the district reserves. However, it's estimated that at the end of this fiscal year, June 30th, 2016, there may be a contribution to reserves. And that's because last year we had budgeted a significant amount of money in professional and specialized services in anticipation of the rules update, but the work obviously now is maybe beginning this year. Number four, salaries and employee benefits have been increased by 5%, but the district will use the county's actual escalator number once that becomes available. We do have $7,000 in added for salaries and employee benefits for the 6 weeks of administrative staff training overlap time. And the last handout in this section, I'll get to it, but it talks about staff succession planning. Number five, line 52400, publications and legal notices has been increased by 500 in anticipation of advertising for rules, the Ampine Title V permit renewal, and the administrative position that we're going to be replacing this year. Six, due to closure of Buena Vista Biomass Plant, the anticipated Center for Biological Diversity settlement, $25,000, has been removed from both revenue and the expense line. Seven, 54712 line special projects has been set at $85,000 for the new city county agency diesel program that was approved at our last meeting, and contingencies have been reduced to $10,000. Going back to two, the expenditures for the city county agency diesel program are going to be drawn from the reserves, which are currently set at $457,000. This will allow the district
to carefully and slowly draw down the reserves to a reasonable level over time. And then the next page is an overview. Essentially, it says overview as of March 15th, 2016, gives you the account balance 698,112, reserves 457, operating cash 241,112. That's kind of a snapshot of what the bank account looks like. Then the next two is the draft budget. I currently have revenue set at 630,995 and expenses at 637,08. So again, that's structured to be a balanced budget. As I said before, draw from reserves is $85,000 for the City County Agency Diesel Program. With some level, I don't know yet what it's going to be, but I'm estimating that our reserves as of July 1st, 2016 may be in the neighborhood of $400,000. But that number is not known at this time. The next sheet is the revenue sheet. And you can see in the yellow column, those are the projected revenues that I'm looking at for this next fiscal year. And the change column, one thing I want you to do is go to the bottom of the change column where it says $20,000 and put brackets around that, because that's a negative number. That number should not be a positive $20,000. It's a negative $20,000.
And shouldn't it be 15 instead of 20?
Yes. Actually, it should be 15. Not only should it not be 20, it should be negative and 15. Thank you.
Should be up on total finance, additional financing sources, too, should be a negative 15.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, so that's the revenue, total 515,995. The next sheet is the expense. Again, the yellow column is the projected expenses for this coming year. The notes off to the right side are the basically what I touched upon in my memo. You can see those listed there. The change column does list the changes. There's been a significant amount of reduction in expenses in a number of different lines. We do have some increases in the community projects and in the special projects. And the total for the expenses is 515,708. And then lastly, as I mentioned before, the staff succession planning. Unfortunately, Chris has informed us that she's going to be leaving us at the end of September of this year. And I know she's happy about being able to retire, but that leaves us in a position where we need to fill her position. And I've kind of mapped out a plan here. And here we are in mid-March at this board of directors meeting. In early May, review job description, develop interview questions. Early June, advertise position both internally and externally. Early July, conduct interviews. Early August, hire, perform background checks. And then by mid-August, we would look to start the person in overlap training while Chris is still here. And then at the end of September, when Chris is no longer here, the new employee will be a standalone employee.
But leave your phone number.
Yeah.
Jim?
Yes.
You know on your memo with the eight little bullet points on it?
Yes.
Talks about on item three, the goal is to have an ongoing budget, does not continue to add the reserves. It talks about actual expenditures this year are to be about $100,000. Now, on rules updates, is that what we're looking to spend on rules updates?
No. Rules update is one aspect of that professional and specialized services. Professional and specialized services includes my time because I bill the Air District for my time. So there's that. There's other things. The audit. We're going to have an audit this year, aren't we? Yeah, the audit costs come out of there. So.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I looked at that, too, when it said
yeah.
we budgeted 140, but because we didn't do the rules, we only spent 100. But then in this year's budget, the budget was 125 again.
Yeah.
Since your rules update there, Ray.
No.
Not just you.
So, you know, Jim, one of my favorite programs is the pine needle bins. And so in the budget, it looks like you're projecting $70,000.
That's what I have projected for the expenses, and that's based upon what we've done this last year. And we're not through this year. We're going to restart the program here probably within the next month or so.
Okay.
So we are going to have expenses. But we think that to run the program the way we have done in the last year, that's what would be needed. Yeah.
So we're going to need to more than double the expenditures from what we did last year to run the program this year?
Well, actually, John, what we did last year is we started at 40,000, and then midway through the year we added 30,000 more,
right,
for a total of 70,000 this year.
Right.
So what we're doing is we're just duplicating what we've done this year is a total of 70,000.
Right.
But you're right, John. You're looking at what we originally budgeted. But
requested 15-16 was 30,000, and this year it's 70. So.
Right.
Yeah. So.
But we increased it.
But we increased it. Yeah, actually, we increased it. 40,000. I'm sorry.
Right. I'm already hearing from people, as you know. When does that program start again?
Yeah, and you know, with weather like we had this last weekend, I'm glad we don't have
would
those things.
Would be impossible
out,
anyway.
We'd be hauling a lot of water.
Yes.
Right. Jim, on the revenue sheet. Permits and emissions revenue, air pollution fees, looks like it's going up by 20,000 this year. What is that projection based on?
Well, what we did is we looked at the took a closer look at the actual revenues that we were getting in, and we found that we were coming in a little low previously, and that additional 20. Chris, can you remind me? What we thought that was.
I'm sorry, which line?
The revenue line.
40,
permits and emissions, 46940.
Part of why we were running low previous years is because BV had not come online, but we will have emission fees and permit fees from them this year. Also.
How will we if they've shut down?
Well, our emissions are based on last year, what they did in 2015, and the permits, they have every intention of continuing to keep them active so that should they choose to start up again, they don't have to go through everything all again other than their testing. So there's that. U.S. Mine has come in and picked up the permits from Uniman, which we were missing in the past once they went into mothballs. Then they dropped the permits. U.S. Mine has picked them up. So we're actually looking at a few more dollars, not necessarily a whole lot. And as Jim said, we had been running it a little bit low just to basically cover whatever. Oh, I think the other thing that wasn't in there, wasn't that the PERP fees that we weren't accounting for?
That's it.
It was the PERP fees, the Portable Equipment Registration Program. We get about $13,000 a year from state for that.
That was the one. Yeah, okay. So there was one chunk that was a pretty significant amount of funds,
okay,
that we now have wrapped in.
Community budget line community projects sheet, that's the two bar graphs.
Oh yeah.
What is BP line 42145?
Okay, now that's getting into the APCO update. Do you want to move? Are we moving from the budget to the
APCO? Sorry. I didn't know where the budget stopped and the.
Okay.
Any? Are you hoping for a board motion? Oh, we don't have. Never mind. We don't have the quorum.
Done. The VP burn permit.
Burn permits. Okay. So they've. And then the spent line is.
That would be the projects that we've spent money on.
Okay, so there's no, there's not really a direct correlation between
burn permits
and the money being spent. Okay.
But everything that comes in from the burn permits does get spent under that 54120.
Along with reserves.
Further questions about the budget, proposed budget? Obviously, this will come, I mean, everything from now on through the rest of the meeting will be on the next meeting agenda.
Yes.
I will say, I still wonder about one of my original thoughts, well, not original, but something brought up a while back. If we're only bringing that kind of money on burn permits, sometimes I wonder if we keep having big old reserves, I almost question why we even have burn permits sometimes. The only one good thing I can see about it is maybe you could tell people, hey, burn dry stuff, and, you know, at least they maybe will call and see if it's a burn day, no burn day. Other than that, I'm not sure why we're doing it.
It does give us the opportunity to get to know and understand the folks that, you know, are doing the burning. It gives us opportunity to work with them and educate them, giving them some, we've got a flyer on outdoor burning and some things. People have responded really well to the flyer and the outreach that we do to them.
You know, one thing, I guess it's not the proper time. I'll bring up another time for something else. Thank you, Jim.
Okay, let's move on to the
APCO update.
Okay, and the first thing we have is the Buena Vista Biomass update, and I know Chris distributed this letter from Mike Mustin. We just got this today in the mail, and basically he gives us an update on the fact that the facility is now shut down, at least for the time being. They do want to maintain compliance with permit to operate. Essentially what they're going to do is continue working at the state level, and I believe negotiations with the utility company to try and get some sort of resolution with what's happened. Okay, that's the BVP.
So is it your professional opinion that there may be an opportunity for it to reopen?
Well, from the discussion, I did have a face-to-face meeting with Mike Mustin, and his opinion was if it were to open, it wasn't going to be anytime soon. Probably the soonest he was thinking, maybe a year, maybe longer. Then at the same time, the longer things get drawn out, it's probably looking less favorable that they're open.
Yeah.
So I think the goal for them is to continue to pursue it. But, you know, it sounds like from what he was saying is this would require state legislation at the state level to be able to, you know, have the utility company go back into this agreement with them. I think there's also litigation that's going to be involved, too. So,
I'll be putting on our next Board of Supervisors agenda, just as an FYI, a letter to the governor requesting similar levels of endorsement, whether that be in the form of subsidies or whatever, for biomass plants, along with solar and so forth, given the governor's own declaration of the tree mortality disaster and nothing to do with the material.
That's right.
Right. Maybe I shouldn't be facetious about this, but maybe he wants to open a recycling plant. Right. Okay.
Okay. We'll move on to the smoke reduction bin program.
Yes.
And we were asked at the last meeting to see if we could come up with a name that better fit it instead of pine needle bin. So that's our attempt at calling it the smoke reduction bin program. And we're looking towards starting up again here in spring. And as Supervisor Plass pointed out, the graphs do show the burn permit revenues and then also the expenditure lines
that we have on that, as well as the blue bar is the number of permits issued. There's also two sheets here that are complaint summary reports.
Jim?
And yes.
Excuse me for a second. Mr. Plass, you had asked last meeting if you thought that we would make the $17,000 that was budgeted to receive as revenue on the burn permits.
Burn permits, and whether the two-year option was influencing that or not. Yeah, I remember that question.
Well, the two-year I still can't answer to directly because it's too much of a up and down and back and forth. But we just, this morning, in fact, with a burn permit, broke $16,000.
Okay.
And we'll still be issuing them through the rest of the fiscal year. So the $17,000 is very right in there.
Right in line. Good. Yeah. Accurate budgeting. Good job.
Okay. So the complaint summary report, you have 2014-15 and 2015-16. Of course, the 2015-16 only goes through February. We still have 4 more months. But it does give you an idea on the left-hand side, the causes of complaints. Second from the bottom is outdoor burning. And it is showing that we had 41 total for the whole year. So far, we've got 16. We'll have to wait until the end of this year to really be able to compare apples to apples. But I will tell you that there has been a reduction in outdoor burning complaints at the Air District.
There seems like a big spike in February. Going from an average of 2 or 1 a month to 10?
Yes.
February?
Weather was lovely. People
right.
wanted to burn.
They said,
other
yeah.
people wanted to be outside without smoke. So, explained.
You know, you want a new name for the pine needle bin program? I've come up with one. We call it GRAFT, greatly reducing air fouling transmissions.
GRAFT.
Great, Brian, but.
And will people sign up for that?
I think legions would, yes.
For a graft.
I'm still amazed. I just have to make a personal comment that in my neighborhood, back in February, there were several neighbors who were burning big green piles of like green branches off trees, and I'm like, no. Amazing. Thank you.
Okay.
Do you want
next
to
on the list yeah. is follow-up on the recycle market development zone low-interest loans. This came up last meeting when we were talking about the Vicini project and the fact that they were not able to get the
skipped Down City, one. County, and agencies diesel right. project.
Oh, I'm sorry. I
That's
did
okay.
skip that. City,
okay.
county, and agency diesel project. CCAD, as Chris has called that now. You'll see a news release that has not been sent out. This is draft, but at the last meeting, staff was given direction to come up with some sort of write-up that we could submit to get the positive information out in the community about this program that we're doing. So this is a draft. For that, again, this has not been sent out, but it's the type of thing that I think we were being requested to come up with last time.
Now, I thought we did something like that last year, didn't we? Didn't we have a program like that our last go-around?
Well, we discussed it during the last calendar year, so at the end of 2015, and we did, in December, approve the city-county agency
yeah.
program. So this is a continuation of that program.
So like round two of funding, basically?
Well, not round two. We're still...
This is just a news release.
Yeah, this is just...
Okay.
This is just a news release, but we'll actually...
The PR for our...
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, let
yeah.
us know.
Yeah,
we can
so...
Help.
So you'll be seeing this again at the next meeting because we're going to continue to develop this program so that we have it in the budget starting this coming fiscal year, July 1, and we'll move forward through this next fiscal year with this program.
Okay, so next fiscal year will be funding.
Yeah.
Those, okay.
Yeah.
And Jim, just a general overview of the kind of response you got from this.
Actually, this hasn't gone out yet.
Oh, it
this
hasn't.
This is just
okay.
draft. Yeah,
oh,
this
okay.
is just draft.
Right.
I just wanted to bring it back because right. it was requested at the last meeting.
All righty.
Okay.
Okay, follow up on recycle market development zone.
Yeah, and this is when we were talking about the Vicini project, and they were unable to get the greenhouse gas grant and loan program.
Right.
And I had mentioned that there was a recycle market development zone loan program. I spoke with the folks up there, and they said that unfortunately they use the same criteria as the greenhouse gas loan program, so the Vicini project wouldn't qualify for this loan program even if we were available, it was available to us, which it's not, but I wanted to at least turn that stone over and look at it, and it's not an option.
So they're operating as usual without a new...
Oh, they wanted to buy a new piece of
they
equipment. I know. That's what I'm saying. They don't have the resources to do that.
They've got their old piece of equipment
right.
that they're continuing to use. And as you remember from last meeting, ARB pushed back the requirement, which was going to be January 1st, 2017. But now that's been pushed back to some date. We don't know yet. But so they can continue to operate it, and it's not going to be impacted at least as soon as we thought it was. And then the last thing is the financials through February 2016 that Chris always provides for us. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions on anything on the agenda. And as we've discussed, it will be coming back next time.
Chris, when you generate these reports, I noticed up at the top you're putting a whole fiscal year time frame in there, even though it's to be the one anyway, is kind of expenses to date. Does that skew anything? My experiences with QuickBooks is if you've got an upcoming payment keyed into a date in June, if you make your report parameters through June, it'll pull that in as if you actually expended it rather than actual expenses.
We don't use that function of QuickBooks because everything has to then run through the county. So as we receive a bill, it is paid right then. I don't plan in advance for something to come in. So, yes, you're skewed a little bit, but by the amount of our AT&T bill. Or by the amount of an unexpected authority to construct application coming in, which is $205.
So you don't pre-enter bills that aren't
Why
due
do
to
not?
Be paid for 90 days hmm. out or something?
Yeah, okay.
Oh, okay.
So there is a skew, but it's so minimal, it's
yeah, that's
negligible.
Fine. Questions?
So, okay. This is a full-year budget, as Director Plass just said. And you're projecting to be almost 39% under-expended. Am I reading that correctly?
No, that's going to be the actual year-to-date expenditures.
Okay.
39 cents. I mean, typically this type of budgeting, at the top, your year would be just year-to-date. And
right.
it would state that, for instance, July 15 through our current point in the year is
right.
66% of the year has elapsed.
Right.
So you'd be comparing 66% of the year elapsed with how much percent of the expenses elapsed. And helps keep you online that way.
So we won't know until closer to the end of the fiscal year what percentage expenditures are of revenue.
If you like, I can rerun the revenue to expense report and email it to you guys. That would give you exactly where we are as of February 1st, which is what we've been discussing.
Or do you have a...
And then I'll make sure I do that for the next meeting and
I'm
have
okay.
it through
I'm
the
fine.
Date that we're... End of the last month that...
Yeah, the
closes
last month
before
our meeting. Yeah.
And, of course, the thing that's not on there is I get all the salary information when I get the reconciliation report from the county. So, like, this is missing the February salaries.
Okay.
So, it's when I get the information, so.
We would like that? Yes?
Yeah, I always like that year-to-date report to be
right.
Just that. To
make
be
it a little closer
yeah.
So it's a better handle on what's going on. Okay. Are we finished with item 5, Mr. McCargue?
Yes, we finished with item 5.
Let's go to item 6. I mean, not 6, correspondence.
Correspondence, and that's a letter in your packet. That's from Ron and Dixie Pinelli regarding the Sutter Creek pine needle bin that we had there.
Did you ever get a chance to chat with ACES on those self-compacting bins for maybe for this pine needle program? I don't know. It might be too cost prohibitive, but I know they have them at grocery stores and so forth where the bin itself has a compactor in it, so it's always shoving the material up to the front.
I haven't yet, but I can
so
talk.
So these guys
to
put an old culvert and a pallet on.
I know.
Get rid of it.
What, cardboard? Is there a compactor?
No, I think it's everything.
It's garbage.
Throw
yeah.
everything in. There.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a thought, actually.
I know that would be
not overweight.
Yeah, because otherwise you end up, you know, with a bin.
Fluff.
Half full and fluff and not compacted. People can't put any more in because they can't go in the front door and dump because everybody's dumped right at the front door.
I think most of our sites don't have power, though, so that would be, yeah.
And actually, several of them that I've seen up in my district, they open at one end, and so people push it themselves, you know. Now, how effective is that compared to a compressor?
Yeah.
Probably not very, but
there with a wheelbarrow.
Yeah,
right.
Oh, would that get the water out of there too?
Oh, see.
I
suppose if they had drains.
Yeah, if they had some drain plugs or
yeah.
something.
Well, any other issues or questions from the board? Well, of course, we're not a board right now, but still, you're entitled to ask questions, raise issues. No? Okay. Well, then we will adjourn until May 17th. Is that correct?
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Okay. Uh-oh.
May 17th. We were just talking about.
Oh, we were.
Budget workshop scheduled for that day.
But isn't that the second one?
It's from the budget workshop's from 10 to 12.
Yeah.
So that should work.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Jim.
Ooh.